library kicked us out.
Yes, exactly. I hope everyone enjoyed our last broadcast from the RMU library.
Nice. Welcome back
definitely,
to normal, you know?
Well, we definitely misnamed the quiet room,
yes,
I'll tell you that.
No, I'll tell you, all kidding aside, what we're talking about, if you were not able to partake either live or on the radio on Tuesday, our friends at the RMU Library hosted us for what turned out to be a 1 hour.
Yeah.
I think originally you and I figured 30 minutes, but they were willing to keep us going for an hour. We did our special 100th anniversary of the Bolshevik Revolution broadcast/podcast.
Indeed.
But now we are back for our regular Upon Further Review with
the Podcast Profs.
And who are you again?
I am Soren Fanning, your friendly neighborhood historian, and you are
Dr. Anthony Moretti, an associate professor in the Department of Communication at RMU.
Who, by the way, is looking wonderfully rich and full bodied, like he's
rich,
been aged.
Rich?
Been aged in a cask.
Rich? Hey, rich.
Rich is in vibrant, not as
vibrant,
in.
Yes.
We're both professors, so we know
yes.
It's not monetary
yes.
rich.
I as of yesterday, I do believe in half life.
Yes, indeed.
Yes.
So, congratulations.
I am 25.
In fact, you'll enjoy turning 25 so much you did it twice.
I will do it twice.
Yeah.
Yes. Next year, I'll turn 25 and a half. All right, because of Half-Life.
Half-Life.
All right? But it's a beautiful
in all
thing.
Seriousness, congratulations.
Thank you.
The way to look at birthdays once you pass 40 is you treat it like a video game trophy. It's an achievement unlocked. You know, it's one more year of cheating death.
Well, you know, it's funny. During the 2016 Democratic National Convention, I was watching a speech that former President Bill Clinton made. And if I remember right, he turned 70 last year.
He did.
I think, if my math is being kind to me, and which it rarely is, but that's another story altogether. And he said, you know, for those of us who have more yesterdays than tomorrows, and he went on and on and on. And I thought to myself, oh, wait, I am one of those.
Well, maybe not.
Maybe not, but, you know, we shall see. John Rowland, how old are you, by the way?
21. I had to think about that.
Jeez.
Congratulations.
So if he practiced Half-Life,
I've been
like,
21 for a while. This isn't anything new.
He'd be like 10.
Listen,
and a
in
half.
Today's world, you made it. Welcome to
indeed. Welcome to alleged maturity. All right.
Yeah. Alleged is alleged. Important there,
especially in
very important.
Yeah. Yes. So it is indeed episode 12 now.
Episode 12.
13. Well, was the special Wait. Edition? Was that episode 12?
Well, we'll just put an asterisk by it.
This is week
11 of the semester.
Is it real? I thought it was week 10. No, it's week 11.
So this would be number 12 then, if you count the one from the other day.
Yeah.
Not bad, not bad, not bad.
It's 13, because we did one over the summer.
That's right. Lucky 13.
Oh, yes, we did. That's
lucky
right.
Lucky 13.
Yes. So this, and indeed, lucky 13, excuse me, for the Democrats on Tuesday night.
Yes, it is the 9th of November. It's 2 days after Election Day. On Election Day itself, we didn't know what the results were, so we talked about the end of the Soviet Union. And speaking of collapsing once powerful empires, let's talk about the GOP.
Whoops.
Yeah, oh, wow.
Now, but you know, there is a comparison there. Self-inflicted wounds in both cases, okay?
I will openly admit I have not seen any of the results, so
generally speaking, if you were a Democrat in a contested state, you won. Generally speaking.
Generally
there
speaking.
There are exceptions.
Right. Well, what was remarkable is obviously all eyes were on the New Jersey governor's race and the Old Dominion.
One. And a Democrat one.
Yes. Now Virginia is important because that's been a state that had been purple since the election of Barack Obama in 2008.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's important to look at just how much of a thumping, to borrow the phrase from George W. Bush, the Republicans took. And bear in mind, this isn't even a midterm election. This was an off-year election with bad weather.
Mm-hmm. In a few places, yes.
In Virginia,
yes.
Which really should have depressed turnout. And what we wound up is, of all the ballots that were cast, 54% of them went for the Democrats.
Fake news.
To give you an idea, for comparison's sake, in 1984... when Ronald Reagan beat Walter Mondale like a cheap drum, winning 49 of the 50 United States, he got 53% of the popular vote.
Mm-hmm.
This time around, the Democrats got more than that. And to give you an idea, so obviously the Democrats swept all the statewide races.
Mm-hmm.
Ralph Northam is now the—
which I think is a bigger surprise than winning the governor's race, because yes, there are parts of Virginia that are pretty red.
Oh, absolutely. But here's the bigger case. The bigger case is the Virginia House of Delegates. So I'm going to go through this, and then we'll talk about what it means. The Virginia House of Delegates, to give you an idea, before this, there are 100 seats. 66 of them were controlled by Republicans. I mean, it was an astounding majority. To give you an idea, in the last time they had an election for this, the Democrats only ran 29 total candidates. So they weren't even trying to take back the chamber. The most seats they'd ever picked up in a single election were before this was 4.
Mm-hmm.
So they needed to pick up 16.
Just
to draw even. As of this morning, officially they picked up 15.
Mm-hmm.
And we have 4 races that are pending recounts. So something the Virginia Democratic Party had never even dared to dream about, actually taking control of the chamber, may now actually happen.
I think, a little more skeptical than most.
Not to those
results. And I'm not talking about those results. I understand Tuesday night was a very good night for Democrats. I get that. You know, great, wonderful. You know, have some champagne, enjoy yourselves.
Right.
To some extent, the real, I think, in my mind, the true first litmus test of Trumpism or whatever you want to call it,
right,
to me, in reality, is next year.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, that's the big stress. This was like the first test.
This might have been like a warm-up act to some extent, you know. And this
exhibition
was like
game.
Yeah. And while the numbers are good for Democrats, they should celebrate. They've put a dent in this notion of Trumpism. They have gone ahead and given themselves some real momentum heading into 2018. That'll lead to more money in the coffers and all of that. I get all that. I think it's great, wonderful, etc. I remain unconvinced that 2018 is going to be this monumentally successful night for Democrats. And we'll see. I may turn out to be very wrong.
Well, and
I'm
a year
sure
is also an eternity
exactly,
in politics.
In politics, exactly. You know, look, to me, this is what I think has to continue to go right for Democrats, for them to have a chance next November to make a significant dent in the House, maybe take over the Senate, grab a couple of more governor's seats, cut into Republican advantages in state houses elsewhere, et cetera, et cetera. I think all of the following have to take place. Number one, Trump continues to have to be under the Russia cloud.
Right.
He's likely to be, but there's no guarantee he will be. But let's assume he is.
I will make this prediction. If the Russia cloud is not there, it's because the president of the United States is Mike Pence.
Yeah, well, and there's one possibility. So let's assume the Russia cloud still exists. I think the second thing you have to have is you continue to need to have this sort of bumbling, brusque, evil, mean sort of Donald Trump on Twitter, where he's threatening.
Has there ever been any other
kind?
Well,
there might not have been. That's
I was
going to
say, you know, that implies there's an option on that.
You need that. I think the third thing you need is you need some economic data that are not as good as the economic data that has come out of late.
Right.
Stock market is continuing to inch in a positive direction, which the president will tell you he is responsible for. Yeah, whatever.
Well, since October 1st, yes.
Yes.
That was the beginning of the fiscal year. So everything since October 1st, absolutely, that is Trump administration economy.
He gets credit for it, sure. I think you need to see, at the same time, I think you need to see, you know, the stock market not soaring high. You need to see unemployment data that is not as rosy, that sort of thing. But maybe the most important thing, because those first three things are sort of black and white. Either they are or they aren't.
Right.
The last thing I think is the most important one, and that is mood of the country.
Right, and that's what polls can't capture, is the enthusiasm.
Exactly.
The poll showed that now Governor-elect Northam and Mr. Gillespie, his Republican opponent, were deadlocked.
Mm-hmm.
But what the polls can't capture, and this is what they missed in the 2016 presidential election, was enthusiasm. Who's motivated? Who's demoralized? Now, a couple just to play devil's advocate with you, and I'm wearing a red shirt, so apparently.
Well, let's face it. If you had made that list, I'd been playing devil's advocate.
Exactly.
With you. Exactly.
So a couple, and again, Virginia, I think, makes a great test case because this is a pretty purple state. This is a state that had been reliably Republican up until 2008, and ever since then, it's been trending ever more centrist.
Yep.
A couple things. One, you look at those Democrats that won seats, however. This wasn't the same case as, oh, the same old career Republicans against the same old career Democrats. The overwhelming majority of these elected Democrats are rookies. Mm-hmm. They are first-time office seekers. Obviously not Mr. Northam. Governor-elect Northam was lieutenant governor before this. But particularly in this House of Delegates, these are people who have never before run for office. So in many ways, that new generation is not only running, but winning. And more importantly, unseating incumbents. That should be the canary in the coal mine. And the other thing to bear in mind is, you know, I mean, forget, just move outside of Virginia. A whole slew of new mayors were elected. Many, many, in many cases, first-time non-white mayors.
And look,
mayors.
The Democrats desperately need more people on their bench.
Well, and that bench just exploded
in
size.
That's exactly my point. That bench got a lot bigger on Tuesday night.
Well, and of course, the one House delegate race everyone's talking about, the Virginia 13th, in which the first transgender candidate in American history unseated not just an incumbent, but the author of Virginia's failed bathroom bill, the man who called himself, quote, the chief homophobe of the Commonwealth of Virginia.
Well, he can remain the chief homophobe of the Commonwealth of Virginia, but there's a big difference. He's not in office now.
Well, and Ms. Roem, by the way, I think had probably the classiest case of shade thrown in the press conference, because throughout the campaign, her opponent had been ruthlessly rude.
Mm-hmm.
Toward her, he continued to refer to her as a him.
As a him.
And when asked if she had a message to send to him, she responded simply, "I don't insult my constituents."
You Dang. Have a nice day, you know what I mean?
Wow.
Now,
that sound you heard was mic dropping, by the way.
Yeah, see, you got to go. Bye. Now, I think Pennsylvania will provide us with a really interesting test case for what the Republicans think in 2018. Here's why I say that. Bob Casey is up in the Senate race.
Right.
On paper, the Republicans should look at Bob Casey as one of those Democrats they think they can pick off.
Right.
Here's why. Trump won the state in 16.
Barely, but yes.
Barely. He won. Casey is popular, but he's not one of those, oh my God, kind of senators.
Right. He's not one of those where you don't even think about challenging
Precisely.
Him.
He's not a Dianne Feinstein in California.
Right.
He's not on the Republican side. He's not a John Cornyn in Texas.
Right.
He's one of those guys that you think, you know what, we might be able to pick him off and pick up that seat.
Right.
The Republicans are going to do what the Republicans should do early on. They're going to run, I think, a high-profile candidate. They're going to put a lot of money into this race, et cetera.
Well, but though that does raise an interesting question. You mentioned a high-profile candidate.
Mm-hmm.
Who?
Who?
I mean, are they going to drag poor Rick Santorum out of mothballs again?
Oh.
I mean,
No.
I think
Rick Santorum's brand in this state was damaged enough with the whole scenario with his kids and the cyber school in Virginia.
Well, also, and let's bear in mind, I mean, he lost re-election by over 30 percentage points. That's not a beating. That's practically a hate crime.
But if the Republicans do run, as I think they will, a high-profile candidate, and then start putting a lot of money in this state. Yeah, I know, June, July, August, I get that. Let's see what starts to happen about middle of September.
Right.
If the money starts going away, what that tells you is not only have they given up on Casey here, or Casey losing here, but they see problems.
They're triaging.
Yes, they're starting to figure out where are the places we can hold what we have.
Right.
That, to me, starting about, I'm just going to put an arbitrary date of September 15th, but that doesn't mean that's the date to really start looking.
Or Labor-ish day.
Day, yeah. If we start seeing in middle to late September and then early in October, the money starting to go away, and we start to see polls that also suggest Tom Wolf is likely to be reelected as governor in this state.
Which I know it's absurdly early. I can't see how he loses.
I agree. If we start seeing that here in Pennsylvania, then that's an indication that the Democratic brand is indeed going to be strong elsewhere.
Exactly.
Again, I'm not yet convinced that the Democrats are going to have the kind of success. And I know because, yeah, it's more of a national election. I get all that. I'm just not convinced the Democrats are going to have the kind of success on November 6th, I think is election night next year.
Correct.
Than they did on November 7th of this year.
Now, that said, tonight, or not tonight, but two nights ago, could only help them.
Absolutely. If they did not have a bang-up night on Tuesday night.
It was going to be a kick to the solar plexus. It was
2018, you might as well just write it off now.
Now, what's interesting is, to give you an idea of the headwinds the Democratic Party, and this sort of support your point.
Mm-hmm.
So I mentioned the huge thumping that the Republicans took in Virginia. But think about it. This was a landslide.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about how the Democrats might, maybe, depending on recounts,
mm-hmm.
take control of the chamber. That gives you an idea of how thoroughly gerrymandered these districts are. No, I mean, in all seriousness.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have reached the part of the podcast now where Soren Fanning will go on his soapbox. Please stand by.
But it's an informed soapbox.
No. You're absolutely right. Well,
it's a big, beautiful soapbox. Highest quality. No one gets soapboxes better than me.
Did they like it in China?
In China.
Nice. Now, I think I know where he's about to go on this soapbox, and I do agree with him. So, ladies and gentlemen, sit back, relax, and enjoy Soren Fanning on his soapbox.
Well, just...
Thank you, Soren. Moving right along.
The short version of this is, in 2016, if you added up all the votes cast for the House of Representatives in Congress,
mm-hmm.
they're almost perfectly evenly split. Almost. The Democrats, I think, got 0.2% more than the Republicans. But
Call it even.
And yet, the Republicans enjoy a huge majority. And so this is just the reality. In 2010, when the Democrats, it was their turn to get beat like a cheap drum. All of these states suddenly had Republican governors and Republican state assemblies, and they redrew all the districts. Which makes 2018 supremely important. If the Democrat, because while in 2018 the national landscape is very favorable to Republicans, 2020 has all the hallmarks of it being a lot less friendly. Democrats turn out in higher numbers in presidential elections. That's thing one. Thing two, in 2018, the Democrats have to defend a lot of senators in states Trump won. In 2020, however, the shoe is going to be on the other foot. You're mm-hmm. going to have a lot of vulnerable Republicans
mm-hmm.
in traditionally blue states.
And they likely, if he still is in the White House, unpopular president.
Well, I mean, let's
face
it.
Well, actually, even if Mike Pence is in the office, he might be an unpopular president too. So,
I mean, right now, Donald Trump is far and away the most unpopular president at this point in his presidency since we've started polling. So he's at a historically low level. I think the big thing that's going to wind up being the disaster and coming up for the Republican Party is not if they don't pass their tax reform package. I'm going to make the argument the disaster is if they do pass it,
mm-hmm.
at least in its current form.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you look at those areas, those swing areas, they're the suburbs of the big cities. And you know, I know, shocking, that's where most people live. Imagine that in a democracy. But these are the places that are going to get disproportionately hurt the worst.
They're also going after colleges and universities.
Again.
Are you thinking?
Well, you know, it's that whole double, triple, quadruple down. The problem is if trends continue, and that's a huge if. So I put that big if out there. There's still time to change course. But if the Republican Party does not change course, if they embrace Trumpism ever more than they are now, they continue to focus on the exurbs, rural America, you're looking at the creation of a rump party, of the Republican Party essentially will no longer be able to compete in national elections, assuming they don't change their approach.
Agreed. And this, the scarier part of that is that the man who is leading that rump effort is a guy who is essentially
Wait, Trump effort?
who has been a big city guy his entire life.
Right.
Donald Trump is not, and I'm not making fun of Kentucky, Donald Trump is not Rand Paul.
Right.
All right? He is from...
He's not Ted Cruz.
He's not Ted... He is from the most... He is born and raised, and for all the good and bad associated with New York City, he is a New York City guy.
Yeah.
He is a New York State guy. For him to embrace an ideology that seems so not New York...
Right.
Is surreal in a way.
Well, everything about this president's been surreal.
You know, if this were Mike Huckabee, and
you could see that argument.
Yeah, no disrespect to Mike Huckabee, no disrespect to Arkansas, but that's who he is, that's where he's from. I could see him embracing that sort of outlook. Plus, again, as you and I said, I have maintained that whoever won last year's presidential election was going to be a one-termer.
Yeah, oh, because no. you said that in January of 16.
Angry. The electorate was so angry that my thought was whoever lost in 2016, the other party was, or whoever won in 2016, the other party was going to have a good 2 years to sort out the mess and say, okay, who do we really want to run in 20? And I agree with those who have said, and this saddens me, but I agree with it, that the Democrats' best chance of 2020 is running a white male at the top of the ticket.
Now, and I think at this point, it's interesting to take a step back.
Mm-hmm.
And let's imagine the scenario that did not happen. How much stronger would the Republican Party be today if Hillary Clinton had won the election? And this is, so work with me on this.
Mm-hmm.
She would have come into office with her party in a historically weak position.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're only talking basically that 170,000 votes that's
swung the election.
Three states in the Electoral College.
Yeah, the 3 million number is irrelevant. I don't care if Hillary Clinton got 10 million more votes.
Well, because that's not how we elect presidents.
Exactly. Whether we should is another story.
Right. So, as Thing One said,
as my older son, as you and I have talked about, yes, I forgot to ask him what grade he got on that. I'll have to ask him today.
Ooh, reported over the air.
Nice.
No. Well, that violates privacy. He is actually technically an adult. Sorry.
He is?
Well, legally speaking.
Keep going.
Legally speaking, so is our president, too. But yeah, if Hillary Clinton had been president, she would have walked into an incredibly hostile Congress.
Mm-hmm.
Any agenda would have been dead on arrival. Any executive order she might have wanted to pass to do that had already been done by Barack Obama. You know as well as I, the Republican Party would have teed up a murderer's row of investigations. Just ready to go.
One can hear Mike Flynn. Yes, lock her up.
Exactly. And the Democratic Party would be weak, demoralized. There'd be finger pointing all over the place. And you could see them just getting shellacked.
In 2018.
In 2017.
Well, last night, yeah.
Leading up to 2018, we would be talking today in this alternate reality of the Republicans looking at a veto-proof majority in both houses of Congress.
And probably running in 2020 as close to a guaranteed winning presidency at the top of their ticket as you might guess.
With essentially a mortal lock.
Yes.
Not just on the National Congress.
Right.
But in the oodles of state houses they control.
Well, and I think one of the reasons that 2020 would have been better for the Republicans, if nothing else, is that whoever is the party head at that point, meaning not... guy from Wisconsin, Priebus, that person would have essentially said, look, we're not going to have a circus.
Right.
We're not going to have a circus. And if that means that I get accused of violating somebody's First Amendment rights, so be it. We are not going to have a circus.
And bear in mind, political parties are not obliged
exactly
to nominate as their candidate who the people choose. I'm sorry. It's unpopular. It's anti-democratic. I'll grant you all that. But that's the reality.
Mm-hmm. I mean, look, we had Donna Brazile's comment from the other day. Well, not comment, but notes that came out that said when Hillary Clinton had that fainting episode at a...
It was the 9/11 observation.
It was the 9/11. I was going to say it was September. I kept thinking Veterans Day. Veterans Day is November. Yeah. So it was like I knew those two in my head. Those weren't right. That she was considering replacing her with Joe Biden at that time. Oh, how history might have been different if she had. But right. You're right. The winners on November of 2016, the winning presidential candidate on November 8th of 2016, to some extent, was setting up his or her party to lose.
Yeah, and one of, there are very few ironclad laws of electoral politics, but one of them is always that whichever the incumbent party always loses seats in the first midterm.
The difference, though,
the only exception to that rule. Was George W. Bush.
Yeah.
But
we were
that
war.
Was right after 9/11.
We were
it was
at
a completely
war.
Different situation. Yep.
The difference, though, and I agree with every scenario you've laid out there, the difference would have been that although the Republicans would have been peppering one investigation after another, after another, after another, after another, Hillary Clinton would not have done or said any of the things this year that has made the office of the President of the United States an embarrassment.
Oh, I agree. And I'm not, again, I'm not saying one scenario right. is better or worse than the
it's
other.
Just the way it would have been.
Just that it, you know, if you happen to be Paul Ryan or Mitch McConnell, looking back, you got to think, man, wouldn't it have been better
if.
For us?
Sure.
And right now, I actually think for all the early eulogies on the Democratic Party, I truly think that right now, despite the unfavorable map,
mm-hmm.
enthusiasm is clearly on their side.
Indeed.
Let's just be straight.
Money will be on their side.
Money is on their side. And remember, that's the mama's milk of politics.
And they're going to have Robert Mueller on their side, not on,
in a partisan
in a partisan sense, but in the sense of, so, been dealing with Russia lately?
Well, one of the things we found out, I know we're running short on time, now Manafort's son... is or son or son-in-law
mm-hmm.
is now getting served with papers and reports coming out. And now these are rumors. I mean, I'd call them unverified reports, but they're rumors. Is that Don Jr. and Jared Kushner are next?
Well, let's face it. You want to get to the king. You take out as many of his princes as you possibly can.
So this is, it's going to be very interesting to see what happens. I'd hope we'd have time to talk about the great Asian trip. We may have to wait for next week on that one.
You know, look, for the most part, in my sort of like the last minute that both of us have, this trip for the president so far has gone well.
Oh, absolutely.
There have been no major gaffes. And look, the fish thing was funny. I mean, the fish thing was funny.
Well, I mean, and Trump has had his moments of... you know, foot in mouth disease, but
the fish thing was funny. Yeah.
But World War III didn't break out.
We do know the South Koreans didn't want him to go on a rhetorical blitz against North Korea. And for the most part, except for that one, don't underestimate us comment. He did.
Right.
This trip for this president has gone well. Now, again, I know the cynics are going to say, yeah, low bar, all that stuff. Look, this trip so far for this president has gone well. I think going to the Philippines is a disaster because that guy's a thug, but you know, we'll leave that aside.
Right. And let's face it, when the U.S. president does well abroad, regardless of party, the U.S.
The country does
better.
Well. Your final word, if you want one.
Oh, I won't turn it down.
big surprise. No.
Oh, no. I talk for a living. So absolutely. I would say this for if looking ahead 1 year, which in many ways can be a fool's errand. But a lot of the trends we see that led up to this election,
mm-hmm.
I don't see how they reverse course. That doesn't mean they can't. But I think it would take an... Let me just wait. I think the fate of the Republican Party is no longer in their own hands.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to have to hope that something from the outside comes in to disrupt the way things are going. Yeah. That's my take.
Yeah. My closing take is completely unrelated to what we have talked about. Baseball world, although he'd retired, baseball world lost a good guy this week.
Yeah, yeah. Shockingly so.
Roy Halladay, he was only 40 years old, and it looks more and more like pilot error, maybe indeed what caused, and he was the pilot at the time, maybe responsible for his own passing. But
sort of a buddy, yeah. Buddy Holliday.
Roy Halladay was a hell of pitcher.
Buddy Holly.
Holly, yeah. Roy Halladay was one hell of a good pitcher, and he was one of those really great guys off the field. Yeah. 40 years old, leaves behind a wife and two kids. Yeah, it's probably going to turn out to be his fault that, you know, to some extent he did took but a maneuver still. In a plane that he shouldn't have taken. But that doesn't take away from the fact that, you know, baseball lost a really good guy. This city, meaning Pittsburgh, likes to celebrate the legacy of Roberto Clemente, completely justified. His plane crash that took his life at far too young an age will not be, I think, comparable to the plane crash that took Roy Halladay's life at too young an age. But the bottom line is, in both cases, humanity has had a great loss, and the baseball world, you know, took a great loss too. Indeed. Halladay was one heck of a best pitcher. In some ways, he was one of those guys, he would go out there on one of those nights, and he could beat you 1-0.
Yeah,
every time. So sad night for baseball. But that wraps up the episode. What did we decide?
This 13. Was 13. 13. Lucky
this was
13. 13
of the podcast profs. He is Soren Fanning. I am Anthony Moretti. We will talk to you next week, which will be a bit of a pre-Thanksgiving celebration. It'll be our last podcast before the Thanksgiving break.
Absolutely.
See you then. See you next week on the podcast profs.